Hey guys, welcome back for another episode. This one is going to be a trip report that I had for a week in Miami and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and then also just talk about some regular churning news and things that you should know. So I do still have an Amex account, by the way. I was talking in the last episode about how there were a few shutdowns from Amex, but so far it looks like it's just a one-off thing, and hopefully it's not a widespread wave of shutdowns. Of course, they could come at you at any moment, but for now, things are looking okay at least. And another thing in the latest news is that Wyndham Vikasa redemptions are going to be devalued on March 26th. So let me just see if I can get this right. So right now, you can book any room that is up to $350 per bedroom per night, inclusive of all taxes and fees, for 15,000 points per bedroom per night, and then that's 13,500 points if you have the Wyndham Business Credit Card. And that is going to change to $250 per bedroom per night. But then you can also get a property that is up to $500 per bedroom per night for 30,000 points. So double the cost or double the maximum redemption value. And so what this means is it's basically a 100% increase in the price if you compare to how it was in the fall of last year. Back then, you could book up to $500 per bedroom per night or 15,000 points, and that was it. So in less than 6 months, it has effectively doubled, but at least this time they gave us a little bit of a warning. They told us it'll happen on March 26th. The last devaluation just happened overnight. So what this means is if you're sitting on a big pile of Wyndham points, you might as well make a speculative booking for a Vikasa. That's what I'm looking to do in the next few days, because Vikasa has a pretty generous cancellation policy where if you cancel more than 30 days in advance, you get a full refund. So there's really no reason not to just put in a booking and see what happens. Maybe you stay there, maybe you don't. And I do have experience with canceling Vikasas. It's pretty painless. You just have to call in and they can do it and they refund the points immediately. And one other thing to note is that Wyndham points are on sale again for 0.91 cents per point. So if you need to top off for redemption, or even if you just want to buy all the points for something, that's definitely a great option. But I do always kind of hate when they make points on sale or increase bonuses for credit cards right before they plan to devalue their currencies. I feel like this happens a bit more often than it should if it was just a coincidence. So I feel like they do kind of know what they're doing. But I don't know, maybe there are some people who have Wyndham points and don't stay at Vikasa, so this doesn't really matter to them. I don't know, I guess I haven't really found very many Wyndhams that seem like they're worth staying at. The last time I stayed at a Wyndham was probably like 5 years ago. And so on a related topic, I think most people already know about this, but on the same day, March 26th, is when Hyatt is going to be devaluing their currency. This is something that they do every year just to kind of keep up with inflation. I'm sure you can go to their website and look at what properties are going up in price. And I think some of them do go down in price, but it's usually the properties that are having a good redemption value that go up in price just to make sure that you're not getting too good of a deal. So I'm not a Hyatt person, so I haven't even looked at the chart, but if you are one of those people, you should definitely know about that if you don't already. And I guess an update on what I've been up to as far as buying groups, it's mainly just been getting as many laptops from Best Buy as I can. And then when I have time, I'm considering getting into either Walmart or Amazon next. But both of those do require aging the accounts, at least I think. So it's not quite as easy. But at least with Walmart, once you get your account to be aged well enough, you don't have to worry about like which products you can buy. So I think it can be easier to get orders through in that sense, but I just haven't really figured that out yet. What I am noticing is that if you change your payment method and then make a fairly large order, then your account will get flagged for unusual activity. So it's best to use the same credit card within that account, but that doesn't really work that well for me because I'm trying to churn, of course. So I have a lot of different cars that I'm trying to put spend on. So I'm not really sure what to do there. I feel like one option could be looking into getting that Capital One Walmart card. I haven't heard too many people talking about that, but apparently it's a card that earns 5% cash back at Walmart. It is a personal card, and so it would count against 5 over 24. And also, it's a credit card, so you'd be limited by how much credit limit you have. So I'm not really sure if it's worth it. Ideally, I would like to be able to use my Amex cards at Walmart because I could just spend a lot more with Amex. I mean, right now, Amex will let me spend like probably 10x what any other issuer will. And if I'm going to be getting into this, I want to be able to really scale it. I mean, what's the point if I only have like a 15K credit limit? Because with buyer groups, you don't have a very quick turnaround time, especially if you're sending to max out deals. I mean, you have to order the product and then you wait for it to ship and then it ships and then it arrives at the buying groups and then it gets scanned in and then you request a payment. And that entire process can take about 2 to 3 weeks to complete the loop. So then the credit limit, well, it limits you in two ways. One is it limits how much you can float without having to use additional capital to cycle the card. And then also you do have to worry about the bank having issues with you cycling it. Capital One in particular does sometimes have an issue with it, and I feel like they are one of the more shutdown happy banks. I mean, you probably wouldn't get into trouble unless you're doing like $1 million in the card, but there are banks like Amex that can let you cycle pretty freely. So yeah, if anyone has this card and it's working for them, or if anyone has any recommendations on how to scale up Amazon and Walmart, I'd love to hear from you. Okay, so moving on to the trip report. So yeah, I just spent the last week in Miami and St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Island. And yeah, we just had a really good time. This was our first time in Miami, and it really kind of blew away our expectations. It was just a really cool place. So we were stayed there from Saturday until Friday, and then we're in St. Croix from Friday until Sunday. And I guess I'll just start with the flights. So there is a nonstop flight from Portland to Miami, which was great. It was only like, I think, 5 hours. And I think I've said this a few times, but I have Alaska MVP status, which is their lowest tier status. And that comes with free exit row seating, which is really nice. I have flown Alaska domestic first a few times, but I would say that, I mean, Alaska, their first class product is not really that great, and I feel like the exit row is almost as good. So they've definitely earned my loyalty. On the way back, we were on Delta, and we were just in like a regular economy seat. And I'm about 6'3", so kind of tall. And this was about 8 or 9 hours in total when you count the flight from St. Croix to Atlanta and then Atlanta to Portland. And I was kind of hurting. Like my back was kind of sore and my knees were also sore from just pushing up against the seat in front of me. So it is kind of hard to go back. I think next time if I'm on Delta or United, I'll probably just pay for the exit row. But at least for the Delta flight, it would have been like $150 in total for both of those flights, which was almost as much as the flight itself. So anyway, yeah, I think I'm jumping around a little bit here. But yeah, Portland to Miami was on Alaska, and then Miami to St. Croix was on American. And we got a pretty good deal when using American miles on that flight. It was only like 11,000 or 12,000 miles when the cash price was $350. And Miami is pretty great, by the way. I mean, they just have so many flights to the entire Caribbean, and everything is just like a 2 or 3 hour flight. So yeah, that was on American, and even though I have Alaska MVP, I just didn't really bother trying to enter my Alaska frequent flyer number into the reservation because it was booked with American miles. So I don't know, I didn't even bother trying to link my Alaska number. I don't think I would have gotten anything anyway. The complimentary upgrade list had like 26 people on it, and American does not give you free exit row for their lowest tier elites. And then for the flight back from St. Croix, we flew on Delta, and that was a pretty cheap ticket. It was only like $250 all the way from St. Croix to Portland, and I was able to liquidate some of my Amex airline credits for that. So it was pretty simple booking process for all three of these flights. I mean, they are sort of domestic flights. And moving on to the lounges while we were doing our air travel. So one thing I didn't know, I'm not sure if I talked about this or not, but the Capital One Venture X business card, its Priority Pass does grant you access to the Priority Pass restaurant network, whereas the Venture X personal card does not. So I didn't know this for quite a while. I just read somewhere Venture X doesn't have Priority Pass restaurants. So even though I've had this card for over a year now, I wasn't using the restaurant benefit. I did have some restaurant benefit from the US Bank Altitude Connect business card, which gives you 4 one-time passes per card. But yeah, the Priority Pass restaurants are pretty important for Portland because we don't really have very many airline lounges in the airport. We do have an Alaska Lounge and a United Lounge. And actually, the Delta Sky Club is pretty good, but the Alaska Lounge and the United Club are not really that good. But we do have a Priority Pass restaurant. It's called Capers. The food is kind of okay. We do really like the salmon risotto if we're there during dinner. But if it's for breakfast, I don't know. I usually like to just make my own breakfast at home. But they do have all sorts of, you know, free snacks and whatever, up to $28 per person every time you're in that airport. So that's on the B and C gates where Alaska operates. And then on the other side with United and I think Southwest, there's the Capers Market, which is just like a grab and go thing. And they do have a bar as well. So you get $28 per person there. And then also the Westward Distillery on the B and C side. I've been there a few times. I would say it is good if you like whiskey, but all of their cocktails are usually made in batches so they can get kind of watered down. But yeah, all I was to say is that in Portland, it is good to have that restaurant benefit with Priority Pass because we have 3 Priority Pass restaurants or experiences, I guess, because the distillery is not really a restaurant. And I'm pretty sure that the Venture X business is the cheapest credit card as far as the annual fee that comes with Priority Pass with restaurants. It's a $400 annual fee, and then you get a $300 travel coupon. So yeah, I didn't even know about that when I decided on renewing this card. I was just looking at the 2x miles on every purchase and the transferring to Turkish Airlines. But of course, Turkish has now devalued their miles program heavily. So I'm not sure if I'll even use that program anymore. So yeah, that was Portland. And then for the flight from Miami to St. Croix, it was a morning flight, so we didn't get to the airport that early because, of course, we wanted to sleep in. But we were there about an hour and a half before departure. We did try to go to the Amex Centurion Lounge, but there was a pretty long line. It probably would have been like 20 to 30 minutes. So we didn't really have enough time to wait in line and eat breakfast in the lounge. So yeah, we ended up just spending like $10 or $15 on a sandwich. And then on the way back from St. Croix, I mean, St. Croix is a pretty small airport. I don't think there's a lounge. We didn't even look. And then in Atlanta, we had about a 1 hour layover. And again, we tried to go to the Sky Club because we were flying Delta, but there was about probably a 15 to 20 minute line. And so we bailed on that one as well. So yeah, I don't know if we were traveling at a bad time or something about lounges in the Southeast. We were 0 for 2 there. And I feel like the Amex lounges in Seattle and San Francisco, I think there has been a line maybe once or twice at the San Francisco one that I've been at. That may have partially been due to COVID. But ever since the Seattle one expanded, I feel like the Seattle one at least has been pretty consistently having decent space, at least from my data points. I'm sure if you go to Flyer Talk or Reddit or whatever, you're going to find people complaining about it. But yeah, I wonder if the Miami one needs an expansion because I feel like there's pretty good amount of traffic in that airport and Atlanta as well. Those are pretty big airports. So yeah, I mean, I do feel really bad for those people that are paying $700 annual fee to try to get in those lounges and have to wait like 20 to 30 minutes. But then again, I feel like with inflation, $700 doesn't really feel like that much money anymore, especially when they're offering these massive sign-up bonuses. So I feel like even though they reduced the or got rid of the guest access, unless you spend $75,000 in a year, I still feel like the number of platinum cardholders has gone up, especially with all the bloggers too. I think I blame them. I don't know. It's always the bloggers' fault for selling all these credit cards. So yeah, of course, this is limited data points, but I feel like we are kind of due for another Platinum annual fee increase because the whole point of having the Platinum card is to get into the lounge and for it to be, this premium product. And if the lounge is always full and you have to wait 15, 20, 30 minutes to get in, then that's not really a luxury experience. But it's not really that big of a deal for us. I just think of it as like an added benefit from churning. If we can get in, great. If not, I'm fine with just buying a sandwich. But if you're paying $700 just to get into the lounge, then I would definitely be annoyed. All right, so moving on to the actual trip. And yeah, the first stop was Miami. And of course, we had booked a Vacasa. It was a really nice condo. We had booked a 2-bedroom just to splurge a little bit. I mean, yeah, 2-bedroom is only 27,000 points per night. And the cash price was close to that cap. It was over $600 per night. And the condo is probably worth $1 million. So it was a really nice condo right in the downtown Brickell District of Miami with an ocean view and everything and plenty of room to spread out our stuff. And this was another one of those working trips that we had done. Our other ones were in Belize and Hawaii. So we worked from the condo for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then took Thursday and Friday off to go explore Miami a bit more and then head over to St. Croix. But yeah, the condo itself was really nice. I mean, great location, and it was really high up and had an ocean view and everything. We did have a few issues with the property management. So this was, I think, my first sort of bad experience with Vacasa. And I kind of deserve this because when I booked this property, it didn't have any reviews. So it was a brand new property, and I think the staff were just inexperienced on how to manage it. And so the first thing was, well, they actually texted me and then they called me asking me what time I would be at the condo because they had to give me the key. So that was a bit unexpected because normally we're used to, like, self-check-in, which is how most Vacasas are. And so it was a little bit annoying to have to, like, schedule a time to come pick up the key. And then when we got up to the room, there was no check-in or check-out instructions whatsoever. They did send us a text with the Wi-Fi password, which Vacasa always does. And then there were just a few things that were just not really working properly. Like the microwave didn't work. And I would say the biggest thing was probably the air conditioner. So it took a little bit of troubleshooting to figure this out. But basically, what happened was if you run the air conditioner for too long at too cold of a setting, it'll eventually just like overwork itself and it will turn off. And then if you wait like an hour or so for it to cool down, then you can reset it and it will start working again. So yeah, it was definitely quite finicky. And so we tried to contact the property management to come fix it. And they sent some guy up there and we tried to explain to him how it was not working. But all he did was try to turn it off and back on again, like we had already done several times. And it was a bit hard to explain to him, like, yeah, if you just let it sit for an hour or so and then reset it, then it will start working. And we had to tell him all this in Spanish, by the way, because, yeah, as we learned, it's pretty common in Miami for people to not speak English that well. There were a few restaurants that we went to that only spoke Spanish. And we read a statistic somewhere that said that Miami was like 60% Spanish speaking. I don't know if that's true or not, but we definitely saw a lot of that. It's just interesting sometimes to see the interactions that people have. While we're in the condo, just kind of waiting around in the lobby, we saw this couple come in and just start speaking Spanish to the reception, and the reception was just not having it. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, we were there for 5 nights and they did not fix our AC. I did call them several times, both the property manager and the Vacasa support, and no one ever came. So thankfully for us, it didn't get too hot while we were there, so it was still more or less okay to sort of deal with the functionality that it did have. But I have heard that in Miami it can get quite hot in the summer, so yeah, you'd definitely be hurting there. And then another thing was that they had a washer and dryer, but they didn't have any laundry detergent. So I don't know if that's a thing or not, Are you supposed to bring your own laundry detergent to Vacasa's? I feel like most places have them, but yeah, anyway, now we have a bag of Tide Pods that we can bring to the next one just in case. But yeah, all things considered, the Vacasa was still amazing. So we were at the Vacasa for 5 nights from Sunday to Friday, just because that's all the points that it had at the time. And on the first night, on Saturday night, we just stayed at a Hyatt. It was the Hyatt Regency Coral Gables. It was a pretty good hotel. I mainly just stayed there because I had one of those Category 1 through 4 Hyatt certificates. I got that because I had stayed at, I think, 5 different Hyatt brands. I don't know. Hyatt has this thing where they give you a free night certificate when you stay at a certain number of different brands, which is a pretty good benefit. I didn't even know that I would get that until I got the email saying that I had it. So it's a good use of that certificate. As you probably know by now, again, I don't have Hyatt Globalist, so we did not get free parking and free breakfast. But we wanted to get breakfast somewhere else anyway, and while the parking was like $35 or $40 a night, we ended up not doing that because there was free street parking from like midnight until 9 a.m. or something like that. So we only ended up paying like $3 or $4 for time that we were parked outside of those hours. So it was really just a quick stop at that hotel anyway. So we rented a car from National just for the first day. So we got to use the National Executive Aisle in Miami Airport, which was great. We ended up getting a Jeep Wrangler, which is a pretty fun car to drive. And by the way, we've had really good luck at the National Executive Aisle. I feel like almost every time we've done it, we've gotten a pretty nice car. So yeah, the first day we just kind of cruised around Miami and we went over to the Everglades to do the fanboat tour and got to see some alligators. It was a pretty quick tour. I think it was a bit overrated. It was only like an hour and they just kind of drive you around and you do get to see some alligators, but they're all mostly sleeping because it's daytime. But it was still a fun time. I've always kind of wanted to try the fanboat because I always see them in the movies. And yeah, as far as Miami goes, I would say there's three main areas that we like to hang out at. There's the Little Havana District, which is on the 8th Street or Calle Ocho, and it's just a pretty long strip of like Cuban restaurants and coffee shops, and there's definitely a lot of the Cuban sandwiches. Then there's the Brickell District in downtown Miami, which is where we were staying, and then also Miami Beach, which is kind of a separate area where the beach is. So the Brickell District is really nice. I would say it's really classy. It's got all the really tall buildings and everything seems really clean. There's a lot of kind of fancier restaurants and people dressing up to go out to dinner and stuff. And I feel like in Miami, people just go out a lot and stay out pretty late, like even on a weekday. We went out at like 10 or 10:30 p.m. on a Tuesday, and we still saw a lot of people out at the restaurants. So even though it was a 3-hour time change coming from the West Coast, it almost felt like we were in a similar time zone because people just do things a lot later. But yeah, we really liked Miami. It was some really good vibes, and yeah, just overall really cool place. If you haven't been, I definitely recommend it. So that was the Brickell District, and then there's Miami Beach, which is a totally different place. The beach is really nice. Like, it's a really big beach. There's enough room for everyone. It just goes on for miles. But I would say that the vibes there, it was pretty wild. I think during daytime, it was more or less okay. But when you go out at night, it can be pretty crazy. We were just out there on a Thursday night, and it was wild. I mean, it was absolutely bonkers. And our Uber driver kept talking about how they were trying to get more police from the surrounding areas because of spring break. So yeah, I mean, when we were deciding where to stay, like Miami Beach versus downtown Miami, there is a lot more happening in Miami Beach, but I still think we made a good decision with where we're at. I mean, at the time I was just picking like wherever had the best condo. And like I said, I'm from the West Coast, so this is my first time to Miami. So I understand that this is not new information to a lot of people that live on the East Coast, but it was just a lot more than I was expecting. And so moving on to our trip to St. Croix. So if you don't already know, St. Croix is one of the U.S. Virgin Islands. There are two others, and those are St. Thomas and St. John. If you've ever been on one of those Caribbean cruises, you probably already know all of them. But this was one of my first times to the Caribbean. The only other places I've been to are Puerto Rico. And yeah, I guess that's it, actually. I would say that the great thing about St. Croix is that it's part of the U.S. So when you land, you don't have to go through immigration and everything. So it was very efficient. We just walked out of the terminal and went right to the rental car and got our rental car in less than 5 minutes. It was probably the quickest rental car counter experience that we've had. They just asked for my driver's license and credit card and asked if we wanted any upsells, and we said no, and then they just gave us the keys. I really wish all rental car counters were like that. And unfortunately, National does not have a rental car center on the island, so we went with Hertz. I do have the President's Circle status or whatever, but that's just not a thing on this island. They just give you a car, and it was fine for our purposes. And yeah, coming on to this island, St. Croix, it is just so much different from Miami. It's just the opposite in so many ways. It's a lot less developed. It almost feels a bit run down and kind of deserted. You know, there's like grass growing on the sidewalk and a lot of empty commercial spaces. And there just aren't very many hotels. And the few hotels that they do have are just very expensive. I think they do have a Marriott hotel somewhere, but it doesn't have very good reviews. So we ended up just staying at an Airbnb because sadly there's no Vacasa on the island either. And I would say the hours of operation on the island are a lot different. People don't really stay out at night. We were at a bar and things were winding down at like 9 or 10 because it does feel kind of spooky at night. And I did read online as well that it's not recommended to stay out after dark. And the first morning, which was a Saturday morning, the sunrise was at like 6:30 or 7. And then shortly after that, there was some yard work going on. So it was a bit of an adjustment to go from Miami to that. And our Airbnb didn't really have windows that could close. It was kind of an open air concept. So there was no way to have any sort of soundproofing at all. And it was very bright in the mornings. But we ended up really liking the island because there's just not that many people there. So all of the beaches are really nice. I'm pretty sure that this island doesn't have a cruise ship port. So that definitely helps with the crowds. I just don't think that they would be able to handle a cruise ship coming there. And I mean, once you get off your cruise ship, there's not really that much to do. I mean, you kind of need to have a car to drive around. And so we were only there for 2 days, and we just spent most of our time just driving around and going to different beaches. And I do think it's a really good place to relax over there. The beaches are great. I wanted to try the diving, but we just didn't have enough time. So yeah, that was pretty much the trip. Coming back was a bit of a challenge. The line at the TSA was really long, which was a little bit concerning because we showed up to the airport like an hour before our flight, but no one really looked too worried. They were like, yeah, this happens all the time. Like, they'll figure it out. And eventually, about 20 minutes before departure, they did call out, like, is anyone on the Delta flight? Can you just come to the front of the line? And so they got us through first. And then there was another American flight that was departing like 30 minutes after ours. So I'm sure they got through everyone in time. It just feels like they don't have the capacity to handle two flights at once coming out of that airport. Because as far as I know, I think there's only three flights per day. There's two American flights and one Delta flight. So if you're on that Delta flight, if you want to just save the stress, it's probably best to show up to the airport a bit earlier. But yeah, I would say St. Croix is a great place for a short getaway for a few days. I don't think there's a whole lot to do. You probably don't want to stay there for too long, but we really enjoyed our trip. I think we are kind of looking at maybe going to St. Thomas and St. John next time, or I mean, anywhere else in the Caribbean. We were mainly just picking the Virgin Islands so we didn't have to deal with the immigration and customs stuff, but there's so many options down there, and yeah, I'm really jealous of people that are living in Miami and have access to all that. So, looking forward to planning another trip down there. And yeah, that's all I got for this episode. As usual, feel free to join the free Slack if you haven't already. That's probably the best way to reach me, although you can always email me as well. Thanks for listening, and until next time.